Afternoon. Welcome to Eugene, everybody. I'm Nancy. Thank you for joining this public hearing of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. I'm Nancy Nathanson. I'm from Eugene. Guidelines to help keep this meeting moving as rapidly and quickly as we can this afternoon so we can hear from the most number of people on the most number of topics possible. Before I talk about that, I'd like us to start so that you can get to know who's here. We will quickly introduce ourselves, just telling you names and where we're from, starting over here.
Wait.
We gotta have the mic.
Sorry, Rocco.
I thought I had a plan.
Did they hear you?
All right, they heard me.
Hi. I'm Phil Barnhart, state representative from House District 11. I'm saying about as loud as I can. I represent Central Lane and Linn County, including parts of Eugene, including the spot we're sitting in right now.
Good afternoon. It's good to see you all. My name is Mark Meek, and I'm representing House District 40, which is Oregon City and Gladstone. I'm glad to see you all here today.
Good afternoon. My name is John Lively. I represent House District 12, which is Springfield.
Paul Holvey, state representative, House District 8, South Eugene, Lorain, Notai, Alvador, and a few other places. Good to see you all out this afternoon.
Dwayne Stark, Southern Oregon.
Good afternoon. My name is Barbara Smith Warner. I am a state representative from House District 45, which is Northeast Portland. Thank you all for being here.
Well, again, so pleased to see everybody out today. I'm David Gomberg from House District 10 on the beautiful Oregon coast. I live in Lincoln City.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Jennifer Williamson. I am the state representative from House District 36, which is Northwest, Southwest, and downtown Portland, and I'm the Oregon House Majority Leader.
My name is Bill Hansel. I'm a state senator from District 29, which is in the northeast corner of the state. My district starts at Hells Canyon on the Idaho border and then flows, goes west to the Dalles Dam. I am also a proud Duck. Go Ducks.
I'm Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5. My district includes parts of Coos, Douglas, Lane, Lincoln, Tillamook, Yamhill, and Polk counties.
My name is James Manning. I am a senator representing Senate District 7, which is Eugene, Junction City. I want to give a shout out to all the veterans.
I'm Peter Courtney. I represent portions of Salem, Jervis, and Woodburn. It's great coming here and seeing the sunshine.
I'm Jackie Winters, and I represent the other portion of Salem in Almsville, Turner, Monmouth, and Independence.
I'm Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16. I live in Scappoose. I represent North Tillamook, Clatsop, Columbia, Multnomah, and the working waterfront and portions of rural Washington County.
I'm Richard Devlin. I represent the people in the communities of Lake Oswego, West Linn, Tualatin, Lower Southwest Portland, and I will turn then over to my co-chair from the House, and I'm her counterpart in the Senate.
Thank you Senator Devlin. Senator Devlin is going to help me manage this long, long list of names we have signed up to testify for today. Before we start, I want to mention that there are, because there are a number of you who are standing, there is a room that's been set up right behind us where I am told the big screen is now working, so there's live streaming, real time, of this meeting in the building next door. So if you just walk around, you can find a place to sit and still be involved in the meeting as it's happening in real time. We will be taking 2 hours of testimony, and the time that I'm going to spend right now explaining the logistics will not come out of your time for testimony. We will take 2 hours of testimony, so we'll be here till probably 4:15 or so this afternoon. We will be calling 3 names at a time. And then while 3 are testifying, there are 3, we call this on deck. 3 will be coming forward and taking seats here at the front. As you come up to sit at the table, the first person who's seated and ready just starts speaking while the other 2 are getting prepared and taking their seats. Everybody stays seated until all 3 have finished testifying, and then the next panel comes forward. There are already around 200 people. Well, this was at a quarter till, around 200 people that had signed up to testify. We will not get to all of you, and I'm sorry that there will not be time to get to all of you. At the end of the 2 minutes of time to testify, there will be a beep, and then the next person starts speaking. We ask that everyone stays within the guidelines because we want to hear from the most number of you and about the most number of topics possible. When you signed up, you made a note of the subject area you want to address, like human services, education, public safety, natural resources, and other areas. So we're going to be moving from sheet to sheet with a variety so that we're moving from one topic area to another. Again, we want to make sure we hear as many ideas and as many of your comments as possible. And to that end, to maximize the time so that as many people can speak as possible, we ask that during this public hearing, there be no applause or other kinds of interruptions because it will just take time away from other people to speak. So we appreciate that in advance. Also, we will not be responding to your comments. We will not be answering questions. That just would come out of your time. We're here to listen to you today. If you want to submit written testimony to either supplement the remarks that you made or because you didn't get to speak, there's one email address to send it to. You don't have to figure out all our separate email addresses and do all of that. There's one email address. It's pretty straightforward. waysandmeans.budget@oregonlegislature.gov. I believe there are slips of paper available from staff so that you can have it on the way out. If you send it to that one email address, it gets to all of us. It's publicly available and posted online, so everyone gets to see it. We're ready to start. I'm going to be calling 3 names and then 3 to be on deck. Forrest Cooper, Andy G. on kids fund, on K-12 funding, and Tara Tardif, you are the first group of 3, and on deck, we will take George Gilchrist, Laura Colfin, and Patricia Perlow. Go ahead.
Thanks, Senator Devlin and Representative Nathanson. My name is Forrest Cooper, and I am a teacher in the Fern Ridge School District for over 20 years now, and also serve as an executive officer for the Oregon Education Association. Good afternoon, committee. Elmira High School, where I teach, lost a third of our students over the past couple decades to alternatives education modes due to cuts in programs and staff. We've had cuts in things that I think are typical across the state, and I just wanted to share a couple with you today. In science, we've lost principles of technology. We've lost science projects. We've lost AP biology. In English, we have lost technical writing. In social studies, we have lost AP economics and personal finance. In vocational classes, we have lost advanced shop classes. We have lost accounting. We have lost Excel and PowerPoint classes. We are down to one counselor, and we have lost a media specialist. We have no media specialist in our high school building. In fact, we have no media specialist in the district. We do not have elementary music. We do not have elementary PE. The co-chair's budget letter referred to our structural deficit, and we recognize that every business community, even the business community, understands that Oregon is last in corporate tax rates. I really would like to encourage your group, the legislature, to come bring the leadership to the table from the business community and craft a solution. Businesses need an educated and trained workforce. I believe that you guys can provide the leadership to partner with them to get a revenue solution. We need a revenue solution now for Oregon. The failure of 97 is in large part due to a problem with revenue and public we'll go on.
Hello, thank you for letting me speak here today. My name is Tara Tardiff. I'm a first grade teacher in Bethel School District in West Eugene. My school serves a lower income population. All of our students receive free lunch, and for most families, this is a much needed service. I'm speaking today because I want to see students in our schools succeed, just like you. And I've seen firsthand the impact that a well-funded education can have for our kids. Investments in education improve access to high-quality education, help with the costs of the state-mandated services, such as special education and the PE mandate for elementary students, which will take effect next year. Those with more education earn more over their lifetime and have higher employment rates, and states with higher educational achievement have greater economic growth. This year, I've seen many changes in my classroom. My students are struggling to meet academic standards when I'm unable to meet their social and emotional needs. I have had to leave my classroom 2 times this year during instructional time. This means that due to student behavior becoming so dangerous, this means that my students' learning is interrupted. I cannot imagine what this does to a young mind and how much more challenging the learning process must be when they're confronted with these issues. If we had the staff to meet the needs of our most challenging students, we could prevent these situations from occurring by intervention. My support staff is overwhelmed dealing with these types of behaviors. We don't have a full-time counselor. And our staff is spending less time meeting academic needs and more time helping kids overcome strong feelings. We want to support our students so that they have academic success, but we need adequate funding. It's really upsetting that Oregon ranks 50th in taxes and our students are suffering. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I'd like to ask Mary Spilde to be getting ready to speak after this table.
Sorry. Hello, my name is Andrew Griskoyak. I'm the superintendent for the Siusla School District in Florence, Oregon. I've been with the district since 1996 as a teacher and have served as an administrator for the last 6 years. I do believe I have some of my fellow superintendents from the county around here today. But in our story, Florence is a small town, and the school district and our schools are the community resource for many students and their families. Our district and many other districts in Lane County are still struggling to restore programs and services that started eroding at the beginning of the recession in 2008. Now the Oregon economy is getting stronger and growing. We should be focused on restoring and expanding opportunities for students, strengthening our state, yet our districts are once again facing drastic reductions. How each district will meet those reductions will surely be different, but make no mistake, all detrimental to the future of our students and our state. Reductions will be made in staff, programs, length of school year, or in combination of all three. In rural communities, schools are often the largest employers in the town. The effect of the educational cuts is multifaceted and compounded, affecting students, staff, parents, community, and the overall economic health. Without a legislative commitment to maintain current service levels and address looming unfunded mandates, our district could see a reduction of staff, up to 5 certified teachers from the regular classroom, and an increase in class sizes, particularly elementary classrooms, which will see 35 or more students. And our secondary students will have fewer electives. Our communities do not want less. They want and deserve more. More teachers, smaller class sizes, and more programming options for students. The children of Oregon appreciate your words, but also need your action to preserve their educational opportunities and the future of Oregon. Education is a proven factor that improves the economic viability of a state. Strong schools today means a strong Oregon tomorrow. I urge you to find a funding solution for this budget that meets the current service levels to Oregon schools of $8.4 billion, focusing us to do our jobs and work with students. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Spilde, and I'm proud to serve here at Lane Community College as the president. And I'd like to welcome, I believe I have a minute, to welcome you to Lane Community College, our community's college. We're known here at Lane for our student activism, our values of equity, sustainability, learning, collaboration, and partnership. And today has been a wonderful day of citizen participation, first with Congressman DeFazio, then with Senator Merkley, and now you, our state leaders, and we welcome all of you. I'm very proud that Lane's elected Board of Education passed a resolution on the protection, safety, and sanctuary of all of our students, our DACA students, our Muslim students, all of our students, and I'm here today to give testimony on behalf of all of our students. This will likely be the last roadshow I will attend as president of Lane Community College, though I doubt it will be the last time I testify regarding the appalling state of community college budgets. In my 37 years as an educator in Oregon's community colleges, I can honestly say that there has never been a year that has provided adequate state funding for our colleges. Study after study shows that investing in poor first-generation students saves money. It reduces impacts on social and correctional services, but more importantly, it creates a pathway to self-sufficiency and participation in the economic mainstream. We owe it to the citizens of Lane County to keep college affordable and accessible to all, not just those who grow up in privilege. Let's invest in the least likely to succeed in the same way as we invest in the most likely to succeed. Without an investment of at least $634 million, Lane will be facing radical cuts in faculty, staff, and programs, or huge tuition increases, or more likely a combination of the two. I believe you have it within your power to do something different this year, to provide leadership for reasonable tax reform that requires those with resources to contribute a little more to create the healthy communities that I believe all Oregonians want. Please provide leadership by bringing together business, educators, unions, nonprofits, and citizens together to do the right thing. The social and economic costs of the alternative are dire. Above all, please help us do our jobs of serving students by funding community colleges at $634 million. And P.S., if you can't tell by the state of this room, we really need help with our capital needs and our small business development centers and the Oregon Promise. Thank you for your time and welcome to Lane.
Co-chairs Devlin and Nathanson, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to give testimony today about the work that my colleagues and I do on behalf of indigent people involved in Oregon's criminal and juvenile justice systems. My name is Laura Coffin. I am an attorney with the Appellate Division of the Office of Public Defense Services. We are the appellate public defenders for the entire state of Oregon. We take appeals from cases that come out of Eastern Oregon, the High Desert, the coast, every single county in Oregon. And we litigate our clients' cases in the Court of Appeals, the Oregon Supreme Court, and although this is more rare, in the United States Supreme Court. And our work makes up about 40% of the Court of Appeals' busy caseload. Those cases are there because Oregon law gives all criminal defendants and juvenile dependency litigants the right to appeal trial court judgments. there is a great benefit in having an adequately funded office handle those appeals. The work will be there. We have built a well-oiled machine to handle the work, and that makes it easier for the AG's office and the Court of Appeals, let alone for our clients and the people of Oregon. We help shape and develop criminal law because of the opinions that come out of our cases. We serve as a resource to the trial bar, and we are a very busy law firm. Our attorneys are working at or near capacity. Our legal assistants are supporting 3 to 6 attorneys. Budget cuts could lead to reductions in staff, appeals would take longer to resolve, and trial courts and families would not get the clarity of the opinions and the closure that victims and defendants need. In short, we are a resource-saving service for a need that will be there. And not only that, we are a resource ourselves. Cutting funding would be penny-wise and pound-foolish at best. Thank you.
I'd also like to thank you for allowing us to testify here today. My name is George Gilchrist. I am a registered nurse at the Oregon State Hospital in Junction City. I am concerned about the effects that public safety will have upon it if the Oregon State Hospital is closed. And among the leading causes of disability, severe mental health crises debilitate about 10 million people in the United States annually. Mental health and physical health are closely related. When mentally ill people are dysregulated, they tend to lose track of their ability to care for themselves. This affects the way that they provide their own self-care. A mental health crisis does not only affect activities of daily living, but can also significantly disrupt treatment for chronic diseases, such as diabetes, for example. If left untreated, chronic conditions like diabetes will lead to consequences. Diabetes can lead to microvascular destruction, and that damage can lead to blindness and renal failure and heart disease and neuropathy and chronic non-healing wounds, limb loss, premature death. Untreated severe mental illness leads to significant burdens on taxpayers in the state of Oregon. Junction City Oregon State Hospital provides a place for the challenged, underserved, mentally ill population to stabilize and develop the coping skills that they need to recognize when their mental health is at risk. At Junction City, we provide educational opportunities that are tailored to our clients' needs. Our patients' illnesses are as unique as each of them are. Our clients require the skills and guidance of our highly trained, innovative staff, and we are not interested in having our clients languish at our facility. We do not aim to provide a permanent home to our clients. Our sole goal from the moment that our patients come through our doors is to successfully discharge them back to a meaningful home.
Thank you. And the next group to get ready is Angelique Orman, Nicholas Engel, and Delaney Swing.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patty Perlow. I'm the Lane County District Attorney, and I am here with other members of our public safety complex system. The sheriff is here, and our public defender is here, and the head of our executive director of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association is here, because we work together in concert to make our community safer. I'll start with the Junction City Hospital. I've mentioned before that mental health crisis is a huge problem in our criminal justice system. The sheriff can tell you that on any given day, 60% of the people in our jail suffer from mental illness. We don't have the adequate resources to address their needs here, and if the hospital is closed without investment in our community, we won't have a way to address it, and the criminal justice system will be the only way to address mental health needs in our community. I'd also like to ask you to please continue fully funding justice reinvestment. You will see in Lane County in particular that our recidivism rates are dramatically better than most of the state, when at another time they were dramatically worse, because we have taken the money that you have entrusted to the Criminal Justice Commission to invest in our community to divert people from prison with programming that they can't get anywhere else. If that money is cut, we will not be able to attend to those needs, and we will be sending people to prison, and you'll be spending that money to open an additional prison. Finally, with regard to the JRI money, I know that there is a proposal to cut our treatment court money, and I've signed a letter along with Judge Rookley and Brooke Reinhardt, our public defender, to ask you to please not cut the money to our treatment courts. Treatment courts are the one program we have locally that actually make a difference in people's lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, after this next group of three, we will hear from Vaya Kansar-Lappin, Linda Peterson, and Matthew Spilde.
All right. Co-chairs Devlin and Nathanson, vice chairs and members of the committee. My name is Delaney Swink, and I'm a Planned Parenthood volunteer. I'm here today because I want you to know that Planned Parenthood operates 12 health centers in Oregon that deliver incredible and valuable goals to public health and to our patients. Those health centers perform breast exams, pap smears, and offer STI screenings, high blood pressure screenings, and physical exams. I want to make sure that OHP patients continue to have the freedom to choose to access care at Planned Parenthood. I want you to continue the C-Care program that benefits low-income women in every county, not just Planned Parenthood patients. As a patient and as a student, since I was in high school up until now, Planned Parenthood has been there for me to make sure that I have the tools and information for safe sex and access to birth control so that I can focus on my academics and pursue my future without the fear of unintended pregnancy or other obstacles. I have used C-Care for the past 3 years, currently still use it, and continue to rely on it for the services that I need. I understand that the challenges our state faces are severe, and I know that you must make tough decisions in this budget. However, I don't believe you should consider making cuts to essential programs Oregonians rely on, like healthcare, education, or public safety, while we continue to have the lowest corporate taxes in the nation. Thank you for this opportunity to speak, your time, and for your service.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen of the committee, to have us here today. I know there's a lot of people in this room today who are here to ask you for money and to not take away any more money because there's a lot of things that are in need, and there's a big budget hole cut that is apparent in the biennial budget for Oregon. But I'm here today to offer you a possibility of revenue through our natural resources that are already under control by Oregonians, but not managed properly. And I think that would be the Elliott State Forest is a prime example of a perfect place for the Oregon Global Warming Commission to do their carbon sequestration study that was supposed to be started back in 2008 and has yet to be put any teeth into it, but that will provide an ongoing source of revenue. There is also funding available through bonding of the government to help move that possibly from the Common School Fund and move that into public hands that will keep it going as a place where the citizens of Oregon can enjoy some of the last 3% of forests that are owned by Oregonians. Industry already controls 32% of it. The rest of it is owned by the federal government and a few private individuals. So we'd like to keep this in public hands and use it as a model to bring income in a sustainable and renewable and healthy manner to help keep Oregonians clean, healthy, and living longer. Thank you.
Could you repeat your name for the record, even though I had already called you up?
Nicholas Engel.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Angelique Orman. Sorry, I'm coming in late. I just came from teaching a class. I also would like to implore you to look into carbon sequestration to save our ecology and our economy. And I think I sent you all emails last night, so you should all have the study and the resolution that goes along with it. Thank you.
Thank you. While this panel is coming up, this is Vaya, Linda, and Matthew. I would like to call up Brandeis Z, parent, veteran counselor at Gillum, Tibor Besko, and Christine Drew.
Hello, my name is Jaya Kansar-Lapham, and I thank you, Representative Gomberg. I work in a Department of Human Services office in your district, and I want to urge legislature here, all members, to consider carefully what I have to say about my workday. And thank you for taking this time. I think that I would like to see current levels of funding for our programs. I would like to see that there would be no more cuts in our staffing and that we'd have sufficient education for our staff. I work in a local branch of child welfare. One day this week, 8 children came into care, and we had to find a foster home by that night. I had put my name on the list to continue to watch them if we did not find that housing. Child welfare staff is overwhelmed, and because we are overwhelmed, we have more overcost time, and we lose our efficiency. We'd like to, most importantly, to consider beyond the families of our workers that the children who are being moved over and over from caregiver to caregiver are also wondering what they can expect. I think that the uncertainty in the lives of these children is caused by, in part, by the paralysis of Oregon legislature to govern the funds that are actively moving through our state. I see some freedom of our budgeting, and the corporations are not being asked to pay a fair share. Residents pay income tax. I think that you should consider to choose to develop a budget that is not on the backs of the Oregon families in a state that has the lowest corporate tax in the whole nation.
Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Matthew Spilde. I work for a nonprofit community mental health agency that provides mental health services in rural Lane County to children and families. I came here today to speak out against any proposed cuts to the Oregon Health Plan. Any reduction in the number of people or the types of services provided by OHP will have tangible negative impacts on our communities, especially on our kids. In my work, mental health, the Oregon Health Plan allows us to intervene in meaningful ways every single day. For many children in our state, the Oregon Health Plan is a critical lifeline. And if we begin to make cuts to OHP, we're going to be letting go of that line for a lot of people in our communities, especially a lot of our kids and our neighbors. Of course, we're all here today because of the budget shortfall. To me, the answer seems pretty clear. We just have to look around the country at what other states in similar positions have done. States like California, when faced with problems like this, raised revenue and made investments in critical services, and their economy is thriving right now. States like Kansas, on the other hand, cut revenues, they cut investment, and their economy is in a shambles. I think it's pretty clear which direction our state should go. And then lastly, since I have a little bit of time, I want to speak as a representative of the millennial generation, which is to say that, you know, I'd heard that Oregon used to have a reputation for getting stuff done, for bipartisanship, and I'd like to implore you to let's live up to that reputation. Let's show the rest of the country that we can come together and solve problems. Thank you.
Members of the Ways and Means Committee, my name's Linda Peterson, and I'm a former 16-year care worker. And I'm here to urge you to not balance the budget on the backs of the most vulnerable people in Oregon. Being able to care for people is my chosen profession. And several people in my family had also chosen to do caregiving. If you cannot afford a place to live, you can't support your family or raise your family, you have no choice but to leave the profession, no matter how much you love it. When the voters failed to pass Measure 97, it was out of fear inspired by the TV ads, the radio ads, wherever I constantly found myself drowning in misinformation everywhere. Employers, nursing homes, and utility companies threatened dire consequences to workers and customers if they voted for 97. I implore you, because working people need care really are suffering now, while the corporations are enjoying the largest profits ever in the history of our country, maybe even in the history of the planet. So I'm asking you now, how is the state of Oregon deciding how they're going to balance this budget? Do you know where DHS is making cuts? How will you, as fellow human beings, vote in this legislative session? Will you balance the budget on the backs of those who are already suffering? Thank you. Thank you.
While this group is taking their place, I'm calling on Sean McRae, Brooke Reinhardt, Katie Jason,
Family Preservation Project.
FPP, Family Preservation Project.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Brandi Sacklin. I'm a parent, I'm a veteran, I'm a school counselor at Gillum Elementary. ASCA says that it's one school counselor per 250 students. I serve 561 students and their families on a daily basis. And I want to be very clear about what the question is here today, what your choice is. You are either choosing to invest in holistic, engaged education for our kids, or you are choosing to invest in increased criminal services, drug addiction services, and all the things that go with them. On a daily basis, my students come in from family systems issues, divorce, addiction, abuse, sexual violence, physical violence, mental and emotional. And we as teachers and counselors work to create an environment where they can come in and face a growth mindset. You're not there yet. If you put in the effort, you will make it. Fail is first attempt in learning, and we teach them to be accountable. Yet I don't see anybody being accountable to them or to us as teachers and those who work in education. We don't need more curriculum. That's not what we need. We don't need more science and technology and math standards and state testing. What we need is more people on the ground doing the work, creating a place where our kids can go, where they're safe, where they will grow and be nurtured so that they will graduate and be productive people in society. My question is, why are we not doing that? Where is the lottery money? Where is the marijuana money? Where is it? It's not going to our kids, and we are all going to suffer those consequences. And you are going to live with it on a daily basis on your streets. So I'm going to challenge you, if you'd like to come to my school and sub, be a substitute for one day. Our teachers will write your lesson plans. Come in, sit, and see what they deal with, the discipline, the behavioral issues, the family systems, what it costs for education in Oregon.
Thank you, Representative Nathanson, Senator Devlin, committee members. My name is Tibor Beshkul. I'm a high school counselor. I've been working as a high school counselor here in the Eugene 4J School District for the past 15 years. Last Monday, I joined 300 other Oregon Education Association members, along with many of our SEIU partners at the state capitol, to impress upon our senators and representatives how they must take an active stand in addressing Oregon's revenue shortfalls. Although I was inspired by the unified voices of our coalition insisting on a better Oregon, I was dismayed by the lack of conviction of many of our representatives to take a strong stand. What I heard were reps on both sides of the aisle pointing their fingers at each other and avoiding the serious debate on revenue increases that our students and citizens need.
As a high school counselor, I've seen the impacts of the disinvestment in schools and programs. When I started as a counselor, I used to have time to coordinate valuable programs like the successful AIDS and substance abuse prevention program that every student in our school got to be part of. I used to also co-facilitate a young men's support group. I have not been able to do these types of programs since 2008 when we lost district mental health support services. Now I spend the majority of my time responding to crises, coordinating 504 plans for the growing number of students experiencing anxiety, depression, and other challenges. In this past week alone, I held safe rooms for young people who were impacted by two separate completed suicides and another attempted suicide. On top of that, I provided counseling support services for three different young women whose lives have been violated by molestation and rape. Let's face the fact, Oregon has the lowest corporate tax rate in the nation. Meanwhile, our education system is falling to the bottom.
Hello, thank you for time to speak. My name is Christine Drew, and I'm a PhD student at the University of Oregon in special education. I was told when I moved here that education was a high priority in Oregon. And one thing that I have seen that counteracts that is the lack of funding for special education, EC, early childhood through 12. And that is across the state, but my experience is in Lane County. I have volunteered my time as a PhD student to work with families who are not being adequately served by their special education services. And this is not just rural districts. This is very close to home. So we have students who have been involved in programs since they were born that still are not having their needs met due to a lack of specialists and a lack of funding and training for special education teachers. And this problem is not going away. These children are not going away. They are getting older, and to put it bluntly, will be costing more. That's not my priority, but clearly other people have different ones. They will be costing more. They will end up in residential care, which is not ideal, and we know that that is negatively correlated with all kinds of outcomes, so lower quality of life, lower ability to engage in the community, and those things are happening because they are not being served in their early childhood and in their schools due to a lack of funding, and that is a huge problem. And we have a choice, like they were saying. We can choose to invest in these individuals early on in their life when we can teach them new skills, help them with communication, help them with challenging behavior, or we can invest in residential treatment where their needs are still not met. I work with one family who their child was put in a residential facility that mistreated him, and it was awful, but that was their only option. And now he's back at home, and needs are still not being met. We're relying on PhD students and professors from the university to volunteer their time when that should be met by the state.
Thank you all. While this group is coming up, this should be Sean, Brooke, and Katie. I'm calling on Megan Kempel, Gary Jensen, and Laura Alcorn.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Sean McRae. For 33 years, I have been a criminal defense lawyer trying cases all over the state of Oregon in both state and federal court. Since October, I stepped away from practice, and I am now the executive director of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Before I entered into this new job, I had a case I want to tell you about. My client was charged with arson, a serious crime, and if she had been convicted, she would be facing a ballot measure 11 mandatory minimum sentence. She kept telling me she was innocent. I read the police reports. I got an investigator. I looked into it, and it didn't look good. But there was one name in the police reports for which I didn't have a statement. I kept asking my investigator to find this person. Eventually, she did find this person. He was a good Samaritan, just a guy walking down the street, saw everything that happened, and he confirmed she was totally innocent. I went to the prosecutor, the charges got dismissed, but she had spent 30 days in jail for something that she didn't do. I still lie awake at night and think, what would have happened to her if I hadn't done everything that I did? And that's what criminal defense lawyers do. And we do it as much as we can in concert with our adversaries in the courtroom, the prosecutors, like Ms. Perlow said, with the police, because public safety is a three-legged stool. We gotta have all three legs, prosecution, defense, and law enforcement, to make it work and protect people's rights.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Brooke Reinhardt. I'm the executive director of the Public Defender's Office here in Eugene, and we employ 40 people locally to help make a difference in making sure that when people are charged with crimes that the state does not convict the innocent, and that people receive a zealous defense regardless of whether they have the ability to afford it. That example that Sean just gave you of her client, if that person had been convicted, as you probably know, would probably cost the state somewhere around $500,000 to spend in prison time over the course of 10 years, depending on how much time they've received. We could spend money on prisons, or we can spend money on diverting people from prisons who don't need to be there, people who may have done something wrong, but perhaps aren't people who you want to just throw away the key, because prisons are a resource that, when you compare to the resource of, say, spending elsewhere, it's not a good investment. And that's why I'd urge you to make sure we do not defund justice reinvestment, which is the process of taking some of those dollars and putting it in things like high-risk populations who can be on some sort of probation. And if they're successful, they never go to prison, and they actually get back in the community and make a positive difference. I don't view this as something where we're trying to take money away from something like education. I view this as something where the entire state needs to have the revenue to adequately serve our diverse population. Public defense is about making sure that people who are charged with crimes are fairly treated. And like Ms. McCray said, and like Ms. Perlow said, this is a cooperative effort because public safety requires adequately funding all parts of the system. Thank you very much for your time and listening to us today.
Hello to the committee. My name is Cody Jason, and I am a former inmate at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. While I was there, my children and I participated in a program called the Family Preservation Project. Without that program, I would have had no contact with my children, and as anyone who has any familiarity with incarceration or people who have been incarcerated, that when a caregiver is incarcerated, especially a mother, the whole family is also incarcerated. I'd like to talk today about, I think it's important to say that there are 70,000 kids with an incarcerated parent in Oregon, and that a majority of incarcerated mothers were custodial parents. There is a proposal to open a second women's prison for $19 million. We are advocating for a $400,000 allocation this biennium to do prevention. These dollars are matched dollars for dollar through the YWCA and provide services for up to 650 incarcerated mothers representing 1,500 children. The Family Preservation Project has proven to reduce recidivism rates by 30% and has created significant reductions in the need for foster care placement during a mother's incarceration, creating great savings to the state. Please consider funding FPP and prevention and not more prison growth. Thank you.
Thank you. The group coming forward is Megan, Gary, and Laura. The next group will be Jennifer Snyder, David Sayas, and Tasha Briquette. And for those of you who are listening in the overflow rooms, I understand that the rooms are full. There are many of you out there listening and watching, and we know you're there. Thank you for your patience, too.
Co-chairs Nathanson and Devlin and members of the committee, my name is Megan Kempel. I live in Eugene. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Farm to School and School Garden Network, a network of over 900 farm to school stakeholders in Oregon. We urge you to maintain funding for the Farm to School Grant Program through House Bill 2038. House Bill 2038 would provide funding in the form of grants administered by the Oregon Department of Education to reimburse school districts for their purchases of Oregon-grown and processed foods and for food, agriculture, and garden-based educational activities. Farm-to-school can serve as a significant financial opportunity for Oregon's farmers, fishers, ranchers, food producers, and food manufacturers. When the state makes a relatively small investment, schools can purchase foods from Oregon vendors, keeping the entire amount of their purchases, a portion of which are paid with federal funds, circulating within the Oregon economy, rather than going out of state. For every $1 schools spend on local food, nearly $2 are returned to the Oregon economy. With a state investment of $1.6 million in farm-to-school funding, schools boosted the agricultural economy by purchasing $15 million in Oregon products last school year, including fruits and vegetables, meat, seafood, and dairy, all from Oregon. In this community, during the 2015-16 school year, with the help from these grant funds, Lane County School Districts purchased Oregon-grown and processed products valued at $1.3 million. The program connects kids with Oregon agriculture and helps to bridge our urban and rural divide. Please do your best to retain funding for this very important program. I've submitted some additional written testimony as well. Thank you for your time.
Hello, my name is Laura and I work as a custodian in the Oregon State Junction City Hospital. Institution is a word that sounds lifeless, but here at the hospital, that word can't capture anything that I see. It's just a term. In this building, we have a diverse, thriving community made of clients and staff. We come from all over the state with different backgrounds and cultures. There's always something to learn. The Junction City Hospital offers so much to its clients and resources and programs that are provided specifically for aiding clients to rehabilitate them back into society. When these programs are so highly needed, why is it that we should cut them? While I make my way to clean, I hear a "no running in the halls, please," and a pair of sneakers squeak slower. I can't help but grin at that too familiar sentence. That's us, and they are us. So once again, why should we close the hospital at a time when we know we are the 50th in corporate taxes? Junction City is a place that treats others with respect, and we are a place of healing and hope for individuals. Thank you.
Good afternoon to all, and I thank you for your time and providing us the opportunity to testify on our budget issues. I'm Gary Jensen, a small forest landowner in Lane County and chairman of the Lane County Small Woodlots Association. And I'm speaking on behalf of many of our forest landowners, our small forest landowners in Lane County. And one of our major concerns in the budget proposals is potential reductions to Oregon State University Extension programs. We feel those programs have been very vital to our small woodlot owners in providing both science and techniques for managing lands to maintain the most efficient and conservation modes to protect our forest resources. I'd also like to address some of the budget issues because it's not an easy process to just talk about cutting. You face the reality of having to understand how to generate income, and that has some complex issues to it. But one of the things I'd like to talk about is 50% of our state is federal owned. And our federal government has an obligation to pay some share and has in its history, but we currently wrestle with their changing of the funding process and reducing the funds they allow us. Federal timber receipts would bring in substantial revenues to many of our counties that now are almost at the zero line. Any pressure to help with that would be a very plus positive mode. The other thing is our forest resources are a very valuable resource in Oregon. And we're very fortunate in Oregon that we have a climate and conditions that grow some of the most productive forests in the United States. One of the realities is bringing those people to the table and trying to understand how we may be able to generate revenue from those forest lands. It's delicate, it's not easy, but it does need to be discussed. And I would encourage you to look at trying to move that forward. Thank you.
While this group comes forward, I would like for these three to be coming down: Tad Shannon, Neela Hilton, Daniel Smith.
Good
Co-chairs Devlin Nathanson, vice chairs and members of the committee, also Nathanson and Manning, you're actually my representatives, so thank you for being here today. My name is Tasha Briquet, and I'm a Planned Parenthood volunteer. I'm here today to ask you to support House Bill 2232. I'm a woman with many disabilities, to the point that if I ever became pregnant, I could not safely carry that fetus to term. For 6 years, Planned Parenthood has been my saving grace, offering birth control to ensure that I'm not put in a position that compromises my health. And they've been a resource beyond that, offering STI testing and cancer screenings for the disease that has impacted and taken the lives of many women in my family. They're so good at these things, my primary care physician frequently refers me to their services. I want to make sure access to these life-saving healthcare options are available for all Oregonians at facilities like Planned Parenthood and beyond. This is why I'm asking you to support House Bill 2232 when it reaches your committee. I realize we have budgetary issues, but I feel like you have a choice. Do we continue to have the lowest corporate taxes and let corporations off the hook with that, or do we actually fund critical programs for Oregonians that make sure their lives are as bright as possible? Thank you.
Hello, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Snyder, and I'm here to urge the legislature to continue funding the DHS services for seniors and people with disabilities. The services are essential for me as a senior on Medicare and Social Security, and for my great niece who has intellectual and developmental disabilities. She requires assistance 24 hours a day. Oregon's choices in the past to keep corporate taxes the lowest of all states have contributed to our current funding crisis, but not to the well-being of Oregon's people. In the past, when legislature has chosen to cut social services rather than increase corporate taxes, we've seen the results to be devastating. This year, please make better choices. This year, my family hangs in the balance. My great niece lives with me and other family members. We are able to provide some of the care she needs. The SDS and ODDS programs make it possible for home care and personal support workers to also assist her. Since she has been in service, her progress has been amazing. Because she has been getting services, she can go to a store and buy something that she likes. She can enjoy the bustle and beauty of the Saturday market. She likes to have her nails done and to make collages from magazines. And for her, these tasks require the attention and abilities of other people who can support her cognitively and physically. This care is only available to my great niece because of Oregon's medical home and community-based services. Without these services, our family would be broken up and my great niece would become a neglected and forgotten soul in an overcrowded, ill-supervised setting of strangers. As an Oregonian, she deserves better. In closing, I ask that you choose to support the strength and wellness of families like me, mine, over the greed and excess of some of the world's largest corporations. We also need you to adequately fund all education and social services because we depend on educated professionals to be at work without fear for their own families' lives. Thank you.
Buenas tardes. My name is Aldo Solano. I will be reading Mr. David Saez's testimony. He could not be here. He had a last-minute emergency. Co-chairs Devlin Nathanson and members of the committee, my name is David Saez. I am the executive director of Centro Latino Americano here in Eugene. Centro Latino Americano is a multicultural, bilingual agency dedicated to the empowerment of the Latino community of Lane County by offering social services, facilitating access to community resources, and advocating for fair treatment. I come before you as a community leader to express my complete support of House Bill 2726 and Senate Bill 558, Cover All Kids. Through Medicaid expansion alone, more than 39,000 Oregonians enrolled in the Oregon Health Plan in Lane County. Though these are substantial gains, disparities persist. At Centro Latino Americano, we have organized an annual free health fair in Eugene where over 200 community members, the majority who are uninsured, obtain health services. We have found that the need persists despite healthcare expansion. In Oregon, 2% of Oregon children do not have any coverage from the Health Care for All Children Act, even if income eligible. We have seen firsthand that the care is needed in our community. Continued investments are needed to maintain current service levels and ensure comprehensive coverage for all children who call Oregon home. As a state and as a nation, we value and commit for a free society where individuals have the liberty to attend school and work and develop their talents for benefit of the many. When we deny health care to children, we implicitly tell them that their health does not matter. Therefore, I am urging you to continue to work with your colleagues in the Revenue Committee to find creative ways of raising revenue. I urge you to prioritize funding for all children in our state, including Coverall Kids. No child should ever be turned away from receiving the care that they need. One-time yearly clinics are not nearly enough to ensure timely and preventative care that our communities need. Thank you.
Thank you all. After this panel, this next panel, we will hear from Kendra Wright, Kaya Fields, Cal Mitz.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Tad Shannon. I'm a high school social studies teacher and president of the Eugene Education Association, representing roughly 1,500 teachers, specialists, and substitutes in the 4J and Bethel school districts. This is my 18th year as an educator in the 4J district. Today, I'd like to speak about the critical issue of recruitment and retention of quality educators in our public schools. Teaching has always been a challenging profession and one that tests the mettle of individuals like nothing else I've ever experienced. Even in the best of times, attrition in the profession is high. 40 to 50% of new teachers leave within their first 5 years. Here in Oregon, the problem is even worse. So far this year alone, I know firsthand of 5 teachers who have quit mid-year. Large class sizes, the lack of resources, and specialist time to adequately serve our highest need students have contributed to significant shortages of teachers in key areas like special education, science and math, and bilingual education, to mention just a few. More than 25 years of disinvestment in public education in Oregon, the result of Measure 5, has taken its toll. Oregon is getting a reputation nationally for this neglect. We have one of the highest dropout rates in the nation. Our school year is one of the shortest, and our class sizes are among the highest. No wonder local districts are scrambling to fill teaching positions. The solution to these problems will only come when Oregon makes a commitment to reinvest in public education. This packed room is a testament to the recognition of the need for more revenue. You, our legislators, are key. I implore you in the name of all Oregon educators and the next generation of Oregonians to do the right thing and commit to rebuilding our schools and investing in Oregon's future. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Nyla Garner-Hilton, and I am so grateful for the opportunity to speak to your committee this afternoon. And I am a teacher, a substitute teacher by choice for Springfield Public Schools. My degree is in art education, physical education, and ESL. And I come to you to speak to you about something that is a little bit different than what I've been hearing. And the big thing that is important to me and I think is very impactful to our state is the impoverished young people that we see on a daily basis that are in the streets and walking around in downtown Eugene and other parts of the state of Oregon. And my background, besides teaching, was working in Eastern Europe and working with street children for almost 2 decades. I left my teaching career to go and help these young people and children under the ages of 4 years old to find food and clothing and provisions. And what I'm finding here in our United States is that 1 in 5 children that are living today are impoverished. And that is a contrast and a comparison to adults. 1 in 8 adults is impoverished. This is a major, major issue that I think we need to deal with as educators and as lawmakers and as decision makers, because there is a vacuum that is not catching young people and providing for them in education. The only way and the only ticket out of poverty, as far as I can see it, is a good education. That is the way that we can get out of poverty, and that is the way that we can climb up and make a better life for ourselves and those that we live with in this United States. And we owe every child a chance to succeed. In the words of Abraham Lincoln, he says, we owe them an unfettered start and fair chance in the race of life. And we owe that to our children, an unfettered chance and a race at life. Thank you.
Hello.
Hello, chairs and the members of the board. My name is Daniel Smith, and I'm a first-year student at the University of Oregon. I'm here today to ask the committee to meet the request of students for $100 million for public universities and $15 million for the Oregon Opportunity Grant. Despite coming from a middle-class family, with both my parents having earned bachelor's degrees, I still question whether or not I'll be able to afford to complete my college education. In order to help pay for my first 2 years, my parents have had to pull from their retirement funds to still provide for themselves and my three siblings at home. To make a decision, sometimes I fear that my pursuit of a college education will force my parents to make a decision between providing for my disabled mother and older sister or my livelihood and ability to enter into the workforce. When students like myself have met with legislators, we are told that there just isn't enough money to facilitate the educations of Oregon students. This is an all too easy answer. It enables legislators to remain apolitical and safe in their positions, but this is not the answer the thousands of Oregon students and voters need. What we need to ensure the dignity of Oregon students and the economic growth of Oregon is to look to new revenue sources to help fund our community colleges and universities instead of placing the burden on families and students across Oregon. Corporate tax reform can be the solution to fill the budget deficits prior in higher education. My hope is that you and other legislators can come together to create necessary revenue sources for students so that we will be able to leave college without unsurmountable amounts of debt, enabling us to not only provide for ourselves, but be able to give back to our communities and stimulate the Oregon economy.
As this group comes forward, this is Kendra, Kaya, and Cal, is that right? I would like to be calling on next Mike Barker, Jim Matthew, Larry Schmidt.
Hello, my name is Autumn Dowdy. I'm filling in for Kendra.
Excuse me, I'm going to interrupt you for a moment. Could we have quiet, please? Thank you, so that we can hear. Thanks.
My name is Autumn Dowdy. I'm filling in for Kendra Wright. I am formerly incarcerated, myself and family. And I just wanted to speak a little about what the program has done for my family and myself. Incarceration alone did not help. It was 2 years until I got into the program, which I spent six there. If it wasn't for the program, I wouldn't have been guided in the right direction. And the support for my children and everything that the program helped with for school, counseling, everything they offered helped my family immensely. And my son was failing, straight F's, and because of the program, I was able to contact his teachers directly, and it helped pull him into the right direction. And if it wasn't for FPP, the cycle in my family, it would have continued. There's 70,000 children with incarcerated mothers in the state of Oregon, and my children are two of them. And I think that I know I and my children would have failed if it wasn't for FPP. They have supported us not only there, but after as well. And they make you a part of their family. My children are here today, and if it wasn't for FPP, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Members of the committee, my name is Cal Mitz. I'm the director of the South Coast Interagency Narcotics Team, and I am a lifelong resident of Coos County, Senator Roblin. I'm here to urge you and the state legislature not to eliminate the drug enforcement section of the state police as outlined in the governor's proposed budget. Many drug task forces like SINT in Oregon have at least one drug enforcement detective from Oregon State Police assigned to their teams. Some teams consist of more Today, SINT operates with only two detectives serving 2.5 counties. That would be Coos, Curry, and Western Douglas. One of the detectives currently with SINT is one of the Oregon State Police drug enforcement detectives. These OSPDES detectives are solely and jointly responsible for hundreds of thousands of dollars in forfeiture seized from drug dealers each year. These forfeiture dollars were being stolen from the Oregon economy and destined for areas and criminal organizations outside our state and country. But these dollars are put back into valuable state programs that depend on these forfeiture dollars. This funding will be severely impacted by these DES cuts if they do occur. The staggering amounts of drug seizures and sheer volume of individuals moving multiple pounds of crystal methamphetamine and heroin each week in Coos and Curry counties alone is unprecedented. These seizures represent thousands of individual doses each week that do not reach our communities, including our schools. Heroin has increased in its availability on the South Coast and is being transported from both Portland, Oregon, as well as California directly. Heroin cases now occupy nearly 50% of SINT caseloads. Heroin users have an average addiction that it requires $25,000 to $50,000 per year to maintain. I urge you, please do not cut these services. They're so vital to our community and the welfare of our families.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kaya Fields. My mom is Cody Jason. She was sent to Coffee Creek when I was 11 and my little brother was 2. FPP provided visits for my mom, my brother, and I that were safe and enjoyable. Visiting your mom in prison is never ideal, especially being that young, but FPP made visits feel as natural as they could. They facilitated phone calls between myself and my mom, and they helped her stay in contact with my school and foster family at the time. They made it so my mom could still be a mom. Being able to build a relationship with my mom before she got out because of this program means so much to me. She'll be watching my daughter 5 days a week so I can go back and finish my senior year of high school, which wouldn't have been happening if I didn't feel confident in our relationship. I know this program has helped her realize the importance of having her children in her life and now is being a better mother than I ever imagined. This program has many benefits to moms and especially the children in need state funding. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. As the next group comes forward, we will hear from Monica Olson, Hillel Samlin, and Robert Jacobson.
Members of the committee, my name is Larry Schmitz, and I'm here to urge the legislature to maintain or expand the levels of funding for the Independent Choices Program, which allows people with disabilities to remain in their home rather than having to go to a nursing home. I care for my wife, Donna, who had a disabling stroke 11 years ago. Because Oregon is dead last in corporate taxes in the nation, important programs like the Independent Choices Program are at risk. Without the Independent Choices Program, we would live in constant fear of financial ruin in case of a medical emergency. In my wife Donna's words, I am the best person to be her caregiver. If I could not be her caregiver, I could not afford to hire a full-time caregiver, you know, without the Independent Choices Program. So I think the choice is clear. Additional revenue must be found in order to avoid cuts which affect real people like my wife and myself. And, you know, I thank you very much for this opportunity to share my story, and I thank you in advance for continuing to fund the services for people with disabilities.
I'm Mike Barker. I'm an accredited Veterans Service Officer for the Veterans of Foreign War and several other nationally accredited service organizations. Thank you for being here today to listen to the desires of Oregon voters. The men and women of Oregon who have served our great nation's military have earned benefits promised by the government. There are home loan benefits, education benefits, health benefits, disability benefits, and several others. Oregon has always recognized the need to fund services to veterans through the general funds. House Bill 5039, however, proposes to cut this funding for veteran services by a whopping 80%, while reducing other general fund programs by a mere 4%, quite a disparity. Once again, we have our government trying to cure its budget shortfalls on the backs of veterans. Measure 96, which was passed last year by 84% of Oregon voters, a big majority. In fact, it was the largest success of any bill in Oregon history. Oregon voters agreed that veterans should have additional funding. Please honor those voters. Measure 96 was never intended to be a main source of funding for veteran services in Oregon. During the election process, Measure 96 was advertised as a way to supplement current general funding for veterans and a way to increase veteran services of non-governmental veteran service organizations. Additional funding for the Veterans of Foreign Wars, American Legion, and other accredited or nationally, congressionally accredited veteran service organizations supports the needs for non-governmental, nationally accredited service officers to help veterans navigate the Department of Veteran Affairs and its bureaucracy and red tape.
My name is Jim Matthews. I'm Post Commander, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Springfield 3965. It's one of 84 posts in the state of Oregon, third largest. I'm also one of 350,000 veterans in our great state, the very men and women that donned the uniform to preserve our freedoms and the very life that we so cherish. Measure 96, one of the most popular measures that's ever come across a ballot, passing by an overwhelming 84%. It sets aside 1.5% of lottery money earmarked for veteran services, and it was stated funding in addition to current budgeted amounts for ODVA. I repeat, in addition to. Mike's already alluded to the services that will provide. It was written in the voters' pamphlet, Oregon can do more to connect veterans with much-needed services. And our own lawmakers, you sitting here, stated Measure 96 would provide critical service for veterans in addition to current state funding for veterans. And I'm going to repeat again, in addition to. Write that down. Our governor's intent, Governor Brown, elects to cut $10 million from ODVA and backfill those cuts with the very funds that 96 provides. It's not the intent of 96. That's not what I voted for. In addition to me, means above and beyond what was allocated in the first place. Our lawmakers are already signaled to us that they're ready to reject portions of the governor's budget. Those portions certainly haven't been etched in stone yet, but I certainly hope that those cuts to the veterans programs aren't on a high priority for all of you up there. Right now, 73% of Oregon voters oppose any cuts to veteran services. 73. Thank you.
Thank you. While this group makes your way up, the next group to get prepared is Eileen Nittler, Robert Reeder, and Rachel Grisham. And if you have testimony to distribute to committee members, there's a staff person sitting on the center aisle. She's raising her hand. You can give written testimony to the staff person one more time, and it will get to everybody at the end of the meeting. Thank you.
All right, Co-Chair Devlin and Nathanson, Vice Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing my testimony today.
First, my name is Monica Olson, and I'm here today as a volunteer for Planned Parenthood asking that you support House Bill 2232. Because Planned Parenthood stands by me and its 70,000 other Oregon patients. The times could not be more crucial for Oregon to maintain access to basic health care, especially reproductive health care. It is also necessary that we expand our horizons because this is a life-saving, cost-saving health care. As a patient of reproductive health care, I was diagnosed with human papillomavirus in April of 2016. I was also diagnosed with CIN3, which is essentially a high-grade precancer cell and most likely caused by the HPV that I was diagnosed with. During this time, I was lethargic and weaker due to the fact that my immune system was fighting the virus. There was also a lot of emotional stress caused by this, and it affected my ability to comprehend complex material in school, as well as personal and, you know, private relationships. But I was lucky. I did not have to endure as much as a good friend of mine did. She was diagnosed with stage 3 cervical cancer last year. It took her 3 months before she received a radical trachelectomy. During the 3 months, I watched an increase in conflict between her and her fiance. Her grades in school dropped, and she almost lost her housing. If it wasn't for the surgery she received, she wouldn't be on the mend with her family. She would not be back up in school with her 4.0 degree, and she probably would be homeless. She might not even be here with us today. Truth be told, the risks of dying from cervical cancer are higher than experts claimed it to be in the past. About 12,990 were diagnosed with cervical cancer in 2016, and of those, 4,120 died. Now, I completely understand that there are many difficult decisions. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Hillel Samlin. I'm a county mental health professional, a member of the GTFF 3544, and a doctoral candidate at the University of Oregon. And though I'm feeling a little sick and under the weather and kind of lost my voice a bit, I feel I need to be here to speak for a group that has little voice, and that's the patients at the State Hospital in Junction City. I want to ask you to maintain funding for the State Psychiatric Hospital, which provides mental health treatment in a secure setting to some of the most vulnerable adults in Oregon. It also employs 400 people, which makes the facility essential to both the mental health and economic health of our county. The State Hospital, which has only been open for a year and a half, provides critical services and treatment to adults that are so seriously ill that they are a risk to harming themselves or others and those who are involved in the criminal justice system. There is nowhere else for these patients to go. Even as it stands now, too many people that need this level of treatment and care cannot access it and are turned away. There's a lack of community mental health treatment providers and facilities, especially those that are set up and prepared to serve this population. The closing of the State Hospital in Junction City will mean that many mentally ill adults in our county will have no safe place to receive the treatment they need. It means that those in our jails who are sick, too sick to even stand trial, will have to languish behind bars instead of getting care. It means sentencing more people with mental health problems to prison. We need to not only ensure that this hospital stays open, but that mental health services across all levels of care receive more funding. The need in our community is dire, and it cannot be ignored. At the same time, the people of Oregon can't be forced to choose between funding mental health care or funding education or other vital social services. The choice should not be in deciding which vulnerable populations in our community want to harm the least. Rather, we have a choice about whether we want to ask corporations to pay their fair share of taxes. We have a choice about whether we want to value the profits of large corporations and the rich over the lives of those suffering from mental health problems. I urge you to not fall prey to false choices about what vital services we must cut. Our choice is whether or not we want to have an adequate and fair tax system in Oregon. I hope you will choose to help build a state that takes care of its citizens. Thanks.
Eileen Nittler, Robert Reeder, Rachel Grisham, I don't see you on deck. The next three will be Laura Coffin, Ethan Perkins, and Byron Trapp. Wow, that was fast. Thank you.
Run for it. We got to get everybody in. My name's Eileen Nittler, and I live in Eugene. Thanks for coming here. I'd also love to see a revenue road show, if we could get that going. 15 years ago, when my son was starting kindergarten, I found myself digging through the recycling bins on the curb when I went for a walk looking for the box tops at a dime apiece. This was how we were going to fund our special programs in elementary school. And I thought, even then, I thought, you know what, we can do better than this. So fast forward, and today I serve on the Eugene 4J School Board, and I am still saying every chance I get that we can do better than we're doing now. So the data are clear. Is this working? Yeah. Data are clear that Oregon has some of the largest class size, and testimony has shown that this impacts mental health, physical health, public safety. Everything comes out of the fact that we have inadequately funded our education system. So I'm aware that we're sitting here pitting social services versus public education, both K-12 and higher education, versus public safety versus everything. And I hate to have that conversation considering we have the lowest corporate tax rate in the U.S. We have a choice to stop the decline in Oregon, starting with the public education system. And I know this takes courage and a lot of work and a lot of negotiation and revenue reform. In the meantime, please do what you can to move us closer to the QEM funding that was set in place about 30 years ago and we've never met, or at least the $8.4 billion that the public schools in Oregon need to stay whole for next year. Thank you.
Hello, chairs and members of the Ways and Means Committee. My name is Rachel Grisham, and I'm a student at Oregon State University in my senior year, majoring in public health. And I have the privilege of serving as the president of ASOSU, the student government, and being a member of the board of directors for the Oregon Student Association. When I graduate, I'm going to have over $25,000 in student debt, which is considerably very low compared to a lot of my counterparts. Affordability has been a constant concern for me throughout my time as a student at Oregon State. Many days I have to consider whether my student fee-funded position will be enough to pay for rent, textbooks, food, and other expenses. This has been such a burden that I have had to take out loans to pay for these essential human needs, as well as sell my own car, which has made transportation very difficult. Every year, the FAFSA tells me that my parents should be able to fund my college education out of pocket. However, they don't. The burden of paying for nearly $10,000 every year in just tuition is all on my shoulders. This burden has caused me to make lifestyle decisions and other ways to pay tuition bills. I know you may have an idea of what a struggling or financially insecure student looks like, but I'm here to tell you that we are all struggling. We all are concerned about how we will pay for tuition, and we will all be affected by tuition increases. You have the choice to determine the ways in which our money is spent. And we know that for decades, the state of Oregon has chosen to fund higher education at lower and lower rates, leading us to be 46th in the nation for funding for higher education. It's time to create additional revenue and open new revenue streams. If you choose to not do this nor fund higher education, you will be leaving students behind. I know there are solutions that we can create together to avoid large tuition increases, and it's time that we do so. We need you to fund universities at $765 million, community colleges at $636 million, and the Oregon Opportunity Grant at $155 million and save our students from drowning in debt. Thank you.
Hello, Ways and Means Committee. My name is Robert Reeder. I'm a first-year student at Oregon State University. I'm in my second term of college, and my debt is already $2,000. And by quick math, my debt by the time I graduate, if I graduate in 4 years, will be over $24,000. I realized this going into college and that it would put me in debt, as most students realize, and I accepted it as a fact. However, this sort of price just to receive an education that in our society is typically deemed as something that is necessary is completely ridiculous. In 2012, 17% of the population had an undergraduate degree. 17% of the population. That's ridiculous in a society that needs higher education. There are many students that refuse college education simply because of the ever-rising cost of higher education. Students that do have to decide to take the risk and pursue a college education in the hope that finishing in the promised 4 years preached by high school counselors. In fact, only 59% of college students finish in the first 6 years. That means their debt is through the roof. We ask you that we want you to fund the universities at $765 million, community college at $636 million, and the Oregon Opportunity Grant at $155 million. Save our students from drowning in debt. Thank you.
The next group to get ready will be Mindy Schlossberg, Julie Bandler, Mark Schlossberg.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, Representative Nathanson and Senator Devlin. My name is Byron Trapp. I'm the sheriff here in Lane County. I want to echo all of the comments made by the district attorney as well as the public defender's office. There are so many public safety issues to address, and I certainly do not envy your job this year. One of my concerns is the proposed reduction of the Oregon State Crime Lab in Eastern Oregon in Pendleton. It's the only lab in Eastern Oregon, and the elimination of this lab will take away much of the crime investigation resources, and many of the lab services are not limited or restricted to inside the lab. There's a critical field response that goes with that is critical in solving many of our violent crimes. Also of concern is the governor and the legislature's proposed budgets include the proposal to eliminate over 70% of the state police drug enforcement detectives. This includes ending OSP's participation on 14 of 18 interagency drug teams across Oregon to include Lane County's. OSP is a critical and necessary partner in Lane County's public safety. The removal of OSP detective support from Lane County's interagency narcotics enforcement team will most assuredly eliminate the Lane County drug enforcement. Drug fuels community crime. Identity, fraud, all types of theft and property crime, residential burglary, assault, family violence, child abuse, and child neglect are all perpetrated by drug use. Perpetuated by drug use. With no drug enforcement in our county, community livability and our public safety will be negatively impacted. Over the past 35 years, OSP trooper strength has been reduced by over 40%, while Oregon's population has increased 52%. Continued dismantling of our public safety is not in our best interest. Thank you.
Thank you for your time and attention. My name is Ethan Perkins. Since the mid-90s, I have been visiting in our juvenile detention centers, our jails, and doing nonviolence programs in our prisons as a volunteer. I'm here to ask you to consider things that you can do to reduce the Department of Corrections budget by legislation that you could pass. The Oregon Department of Corrections budget is slated to grow by almost $10 million in this biennium and almost $30 million by the 2021-22 biennium. How can these expenses best be reduced, assuming Oregon taxpayers spend about $32,000 per incarcerated person per year? If after age 46, when most people age out of crime, the 4,400 inmates with more than 2 years left on their mandated sentences were allowed to petition their sentencing courts for a second look, and if courts granted 25% of those early release each year, then $15 to $45 million could be saved by 2019. Legislation should make early release predicated on evidence rehabilitation, good behavior, good time, and job performance while incarcerated. If the 7,700 inmates with more than 2 years left to serve while incarcerated were allowed to petition their sentencing courts for a second look, and if courts granted 15% of them early release each year, then annual savings of $37 million could be realized. This is twice what the Department of Corrections budget is projected to grow that could be reduced by legislation that you could produce if you decide to be, instead of tough on crime, smart on crime. I encourage you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. So this is Mindy, Julie, and Mark, and after that will be Cyrus Holcomb, Rachel Rich, Gina Weishar.
Thank you to the committee for providing us this opportunity today. My name is Mindy Schlossberg. I'm a parent of three teenagers, a speech-language pathologist with early childhood cares, and a lover of clean air and water. I could ask you to fund any one of these issues or tell you how I've seen the quality of my children's education decrease over the past 10 years. I could tell you about the importance of adequately funding early intervention and early childhood special education for our youngest and most vulnerable Oregonians, or I could talk to you about the need to ensure our public agencies are able to enforce public protection measures designed to safeguard our environment. Instead, I urge you to fund critical services for all Oregonians through revenue reform. Our funding crisis is caused by the choice Oregon has made to have the lowest corporate taxes in the country. Now is the time to make a new choice. It's time for corporations to pay their fair share. As legislators, it is incumbent upon you to solve this budget crisis. We all pay our fair share. It's high time corporations do too. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Julie Baumler. I want to ask for support of Oregon State University's statewide public services. When my family was struggling financially, the information we got from the Extension Service allowed us to help ourselves and feed ourselves and our two children good, healthy food. Today, I give back by volunteering in the Food Pantry Project and as Master Food Preserver. The many volunteers who work under the statewide public services extend the reach of the investments in this area and allow them to go much further than just the dollars that are given to those projects. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for being here today. My name is Mark Schlossberg, and I am a professor of planning, public policy, and management here at the University of Oregon. I'm not here, but in town. And I focus on transportation and how it can best serve local economic development, expand choices for all members of our communities, meet our climate change commitments, and contribute to overall quality of life in our communities. I and my students actively work with communities throughout Oregon on these issues. What is clear is that Oregon communities of all sizes want their kids to be able to walk and bike safely to school, that transit is essential for so many as both a basic social safety net and a catalyst for economic development, and of course our roads and bridges ought to be maintained as well. The only way for Oregon to remain Oregon in terms of quality of life for transportation, education, human services, and the environment is for comprehensive revenue reform, including corporate taxes. We have something special in Oregon in the balance between urban, farm, and forest lands, and our transportation investments are critical for Oregon families and communities to thrive and survive. We also have a competitive advantage here in Oregon to attract and retain the employers and the workforce necessary for the future, and transportation investments are one element along with everything else that you've heard today to move that forward. It's time for Oregon to go big, and it's time for you to make a choice. I'm tired of Oregon trying to do less with less. It's time that we do more with more. I'm ready to pay, but corporations must pay their fair share too. The only way for Oregon to meet our transportation and other needs is that we need you to work like never before to pass real revenue reform. Thank you for your public service to the state.
Thank you all. While this next group comes forward, the next group after that will be Kendra Morgan, Alyssa Walker, Natasha DeSantis. And I'm going to do a quick time check. We're well over half of our way through the public hearing. We won't get to hear from everybody. If you are called up and someone has said mostly what you would have wanted to say, if you care to shorten it a little bit, it makes room for someone else. That's okay if you don't. You still have your 2 minutes. And if you have spoken at a previous public hearing, I'd ask that you not take this second turn. There's already someone here who has volunteered not to take his second turn. Go ahead.
Hi, greetings. My name is Jenna Weishar, and I'm here on behalf of Head Start of Lane County. I am the current chair of the Parent-Led Policy Council, and we are influential as parents on making decisions that go forth with policy and what happens with our kids. Before I was in this role, I was also a teacher for Head Start. Then I became a parent, and I chose to stay home. It has been a huge impact on both my kids. One of my children is already graduated and is in kindergarten. The other has just moved up to the part-day program from early Head Start. Their teachers care about them. Their teachers care about them when they leave their jobs. They change what they are teaching, how they are running their classrooms based on best serving these children, and we have fallen behind. I know the governor has recommended keeping all Oregon preschool funding to stay the same. The Oregon Head Start Association, this would serve every county in Oregon. Every county has a Head Start, has asked for an additional, I think it's $15 million to pay our teachers fairly. When Oregon Preschool Promise started, they put in the budget for those teachers to make far more money than any of the Head Start teachers, any of the teachers that have been in these programs that have existed. Head Start has existed since the 60s. It is one of these programs that has been influential in my life and in so many people's. Our teachers, our staff members are there. They sacrifice their lives every day. They don't go home and leave their jobs there. And it is our turn to not only support our children, we are setting up the foundations for the rest of their life, for them entering the public school systems, to becoming great citizens and doing great things. We need to take care of our teachers and our staff and pay them properly so that we are not facing the high turnovers we have with the introduction of full day kinder and with preschool promise. We need to take care of our teachers.
Good afternoon, Senator Devlin and Representative Nathanson, and members of the Joint Community and Ways and Means. My name is Cyrus Holcomb. I'm a senior at Elkton High School and a student in the Agricultural Sciences and Technology program and an active member of the Elkton FFA chapter. I am here this afternoon to stress the importance of the House Bill 2382 and Senate Bill 230, the Agricultural Education Bill. Every student's experience in an agricultural education program is different. For me personally, I have benefited from the manufacturing courses, including woods and metals. I have been able to take what I have learned in my welding courses and apply it to a supervised agricultural experience project, also known as an SAE, outside of the classroom at Great Northern Trailer Works in Sutherland. I have gained numerous skills, including MIG welding, reading detailed shop plans and fabrication, which will be very useful to me later in life. Because of my time in welding program and my SAE, I will be earning 6 college welding credits this spring. In FFA specifically, I have learned many life skills such as writing resumes and cover letters, keeping detailed and accurate records, public speaking skills, and communication. Without FFA, I would not have learned many of the skills I have today, which includes testifying in front of you this afternoon. FFA has also taught me about selfless services. Our FFA chapter adopted 2 miles on Highway 138 entering our town and recently constructed a trash can bin our chapter will be maintaining throughout the year to help prevent litter from building up at our local swimming hotspot. FFA has also allowed me, my fellow FFA members at our small high school of 90 students, to travel places all over the country, including an annual trip to our nation's capital and all over the world, including South Africa. Thank you for your time this afternoon, and thank you for supporting agricultural education and FFA.
Hi, my name is Rachel Rich, and I was asked by the NEA a couple of years ago to help prove that smarter, balanced, standardized testing was a wonderful thing and to persuade the teachers that it was. And we went to Washington, D.C., gave a presentation, did a vast amount of research, and came to the opposite conclusion, much to their consternation. And I would like to explain to you just briefly how much money we could save between $400 and $600 million by choosing a different kind of test. In 2010, Ron Saxton said that testing at that time cost $3.5 million, including our current infrastructure. Then Smarter Balance was added to Oak Science, the ELPA, and kindergarten exams, leading to an explosion of state-mandated standardized testing expenses. And to clarify, our statewide gain over 4 years in key services to students, directly serving them, from elementary extracurricular to pre-K to talented and gifted, Title I, et cetera, is only up $500,000 in 4 years. Averaged out, that's $1 million up to now. That's the only increase. We are down at least $400,000 for talented and gifted, about $10 million for Title I, which, by the way, some of it was lost because the very poorest school districts were unable to meet the stringent criteria for administering the test, and therefore they lost their Title I funding. Psychological services, which we know the students need, are down by an average of $600,000. So
thank you.
Here's
thank you.
The summary. Thank you.
While this group comes forward, please be ready. Kamala Sugar, Daniel Book, and Bob Homan.
Hi, dear Senator Devlin, Representative Nathanielson, and other members of the Joint Ways and Means Committee. My name is Elisa Walker, and I serve as a mental health housing director at Shangri-La, working with vulnerable people with mental illness who receive services that help them learn to lead stable, safe, productive lives. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to bring my testimony to you for consideration in your decision-making process. In light of Oregon's budgetary deficit, I have concerns about the potential of funding reductions, which put the people I serve at risk for instability and mental health crisis, which could lead to filling the jails, emergency rooms, and other venues due to the lack of services. Reducing support for community-based organizations that support people with mental illness through housing programs would inevitably end up costing Oregon more money for the reasons mentioned. Due to upcoming changes in the state minimum wage, our industry will be competing with an already competitive talent pool, causing difficulty with the ability to attract, hire, retain well-qualified staff. Many working in our industry receive government benefits themselves, as their wages and benefits do not cover all other expenses. At times, our best staff end up leaving, not because they want to, but because they can no longer afford to work in a low-wage job while trying to support and raise their families. I would urge you to ensure that funding for mental health housing programs across the state be protected when making difficult decisions. Thank you, members of the committee, for your commitment to our state, your willingness to hear my testimony today.
Chair Devlin, co-chair. My name is Kendra Morgan, and I serve on the executive team at Shangri-La. We are a multifaceted human services organization that serves young families receiving TANF benefits. We also serve individuals that are struggling with mental illness and those who live with developmental disabilities. Just this past week, I read an article highlighting cities across the United States with remarkable growth and positive change. Out of those featured, four cities in Oregon, Bend, Salem, Portland, and Eugene were featured in the top 10. While this was encouraging to me, it also raised another concern, UC. This past week, I also met with one of our staff who shared her story of working in the human services field and the challenges that she faces due to her low wages. Her name is Cassidy. She shared her story about working at Starbucks previously, and deciding to make a career shift to work with our agency. What she discovered was that her wages and her tips working at Starbucks were more than what she's able to make working in our agency. And she was faced with a really tough decision because she found herself unable to make ends meet. She was faced with a decision of either quitting her job with us and returning to Starbucks and pursuing her education in a different field, or moving back in with her parents so that she could afford to continue to work with us. Cassidy chose to continue to work with us, but I think many others are not making that same choice. In fact, I think there are other people actually avoiding a career in the nonprofit human services sector, not because they aren't passionate and not because they aren't interested, but because they know that they're unable to earn a living wage in this field. My friend Jamie is a perfect example of this. This past month, I had a conversation with her. She's a very compassionate and gifted person and has a lot to offer, but she's actually made the decision to make a career change and away from human services. Thank you.
Representative Nathanson, Senator Devlin,
Means and Weeks Committee. My name is Natasha DeSantis. I'm the Director of Adult Services at Pearl Buck Center here in town. I'm here to echo what they have said and also to speak on behalf of my direct support professionals who unfortunately can't be here to speak for themselves today because I have them in an all-day training on a Saturday. They are professionals. They work tirelessly and hard at their professional training portfolio. We expect them to be professionals, but yet the wages that we are funded at are not at professional wages. There are 14,000 DSPs providing essential cares and services in Oregon for over 6,000 Oregonians with developmental and intellectual disabilities. Of those 14,000, 6,459 of those employees are on require $2 million in public aid. We expect so much out of these folks and these individuals, and as she says, they are very caring and gifted people, but a lot of times have to make the decision to leave the field to go on to other jobs that aren't even, I wouldn't say as important, but the facet and the people that they support and the impact that they make in our community is on a different level. I'd like to read something that was wrote by not one but two of our DSPs. They are a family. My name is Marianne, and my husband Mark and I both work full-time as DSPs. I love my job and have been here for 15 years. My husband and I are also raising three awesome kids. We struggle every month to make ends meet on an income that we currently make. Last year, we attempted to get a mortgage and look into purchasing our first home. We were told to reapply later when we make more money. It was crushing to have a dream like this deferred, to be made feel like the important we work every day is not a career that can support our family and make our dreams come true. Increasing the wage for DSPs would keep more great support staff in their positions, allow staff to provide fully for their families, and help the individuals we serve by decreasing the high rate of staff turnover.
Thank you. For those of you who are still in the overflow rooms, thank you for sticking with us. As this panel comes forward, I would like to call Marilyn Konitzer, Jill Rolfe, and Karen Sachs.
Good afternoon, Representative and Co-Chair Nathanson and Senator Co-Chair Devlin. My name is Kamala Sugar. I'm here as an attorney and a private citizen today, not in my official capacity, but I am here as the co-chair of the Lane County Campaign for Equal Justice Steering Committee and the immediate past chair of the Oregon State Bar Legal Services Program Committee. And I'm here to request that you continue to fund and support the programs of legal aid in Oregon. I know that you represent all different parts of Oregon, and so does legal aid. In particular, I want to share with you that there is one legal aid attorney for every 8,500 people. That isn't enough to meet the needs of our low-income Oregonians. And just for a bit of illustration, legal aid provides the type of services to Oregonians like legal services for housing, legal services for restraining orders for domestic violence. 80% of the clients of legal aid are actually women and children. And so it's really important that we continue to invest in this service for our neighbors and our friends. And I would just ask you to continue those services. Thank you.
I am Daniel Balk. I am the public defender for Douglas County. I'm here because of House Bill 2605 has been referred to your committee. What that bill would do is allow for the election of additional judges in 2018 and in 2019 in various parts of the state. I've been practicing criminal defense exclusively now for over 25 years. When I started out, typically a trial from the time I was appointed on a case till the case was closed was about 4 months. Cases I set now are 6 to 8 months out, and what we are now doing is we call it, well, the judges are setting two or three deep. We appear Monday before trial to find out if we're going to get bumped. And of the last few cases I have had, two of them were bumped. They're now set in the summer. They're now set for June. The last two trials I actually had that went were both Measure 11 horrible child sex cases.
The state got it wrong. The jury came back across the board not guilty. He didn't do it. I got him his life back. The second case I just finished this last week, unfortunately or fortunately, there was overwhelming evidence of guilt on the first two counts. That little girl got closure. That case is done. We can't do that when we only have five judges. When I started out with the public defender's office, I was the fifth attorney. I now employ 12 attorneys. The district attorney and I are both at capacity, but Douglas County still has the same five judges. They can't handle that load. So I'm asking you to give consideration to 2605 so we can get justice for both my client and that little girl. That being said,
good afternoon. Co-chairs Devlin, Representative Nathanson. My name is Bob Holman. I'm the assistant director of the Public Defender Office in Lane County. I've been doing this work for 40 years. I want to urge you to not cut funding for indigent defense. I want to remind you of what happened in 2003 when the state ran out of money. They had to postpone the prosecution of cases. As Sean McCrae testified before you earlier, this is the criminal justice system is a three-legged stool. We need all branches to make this system work, the police, the prosecution, and the defense. In 2003, we had to close our doors for 6 weeks. Some of us worked without pay. We had to lay off lawyers that we couldn't rehire after the funding was reestablished. They found new jobs. One of the important things in our line of work is retaining talented lawyers, and that didn't happen during that 2003 session. I'd also like to talk a little bit about one of the aspects of defense that we do, and that is representing those who are mentally ill and charged with crimes, or mentally ill and they need to be the state is seeking commitment. We are paying an awful lot of money to bring these people back to a situation where in criminal cases where we can represent them. We have a constitutional mandate to not allow the prosecution if our clients can't aid and assist their lawyers. If we send somebody to the state hospital to get treatment to make sure that they're able to aid and assist, it costs $1,000 a day for them to reestablish the ability to assist lawyers. That can be done cheaper in the communities, and I'd urge you to consider some mechanism for doing that. Thank you.
The next group. And then after that will be Imani Dorsey, Kurt Wilcox, and Sarah Lopez.
Thank you for allowing everybody to provide you with testimony today. My name's Jill Rolfe. I'm the Coos County Planning Director, and I'm actually here to support Department of Land Conservation and Development's budget. Some of the money has been shifted to coastal resilience, which I'm a coastal county. I'm also in favor of that. But through the years, the staff has been excellent in supporting all of our portions of our program. So I think focusing on coastal counties only will deplete the entire program. And that's basically all I have to say, other than I do support Cal Metz's testimony regarding drug enforcement. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you all for being here without taking a break and listening to us. I'm Marilyn Kennitzer from Corvallis, Oregon. I represent League Women Voters, and I have several other groups I represent as well on the side. I have been a 50-year advocate of clean air. League Women Voters and the other groups I represent support the regulatory overhaul of Clean Air Oregon, which will improve DEQ's regulations. We support the overhaul and the funding through fees. We know that you know that Title V fees are supposed to be fully funded through fees, but we think the rest of DEQ and the overhaul should be funded through fees as well, since there certainly isn't any more money. Other states do it through general funds, the other programs. We are not able to do that. I'm asking this because DEQ has been systematically underfunded. They don't have enough air permit riders. They don't have enough water permit riders. The permits for water lapse, and the ones in Corvallis lapse like in 2003 for a fiberglass plant there, and they're not being renewed. Those fines then are not being levied because there is nobody, because it's not their fault they're not renewed. So DEQ needs to be fully funded on top of Clean Air Oregon. Within the last 2 years, more information has been coming out from scientists about the really bad effects of particulate matter, in particular on health, and I'm sure you've heard about fine particulate matter and the dangers, but it's really imperative that when a bill comes before you, I think the first one right is 2269. It's being revised right now, so it may come back in a different form, but that's House Bill 2269. I don't know what a Senate bill number is yet, but please look at those carefully and fully fund the Clean Air Overhaul and the DEQ. Thank you.
Hello, Co-Chair Nathanson and Co-Chair Devlin and members of the committee. My name is Karen Sachs and I live in Eugene. I'm the program director for NEDCO, a housing counseling agency serving Lane, Marion, and Clackamas counties. Today I represent my agency as well as the statewide housing counseling network that provide foreclosure counseling to Oregonians facing a mortgage crisis through the Oregon Foreclosure Avoidance Program. As many of you know, the Oregon Foreclosure Avoidance Program, or OFA, launched in mid-2013 and provides an opportunity for Oregonians to have a face-to-face meeting with their lender to resolve their mortgage delinquency. Since its launch, over 5,500 Oregonians have worked with a foreclosure counselor in the OFA program, and we are still seeing upwards of 600 families being referred in the program on a monthly basis. Foreclosure counseling is recognized universally from lenders, attorneys, to mediators as a crucial to helping homeowners navigate the paperwork and the process to required for a successful negotiation. In fact, almost 75% of homeowners participating have resolved their mortgage delinquency. All federal funding for foreclosure counseling has already been eliminated, and without continued support for OFA, those 600 new families referred will lose access to counseling come July 1st. Specifically here in Lane County, over 400 current homeowners will lose ongoing support to resolve their mortgage delinquency. The legislature and many of you in this at this table have been very supportive and generous and huge champions of this program, and I ask that you restore the Oregon Foreclosure Avoidance Program to the Housing and Community Services budget. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. After this group that's coming up, we will have Patricia Neal, Susan Walters, and Sue Densmore.
Good afternoon. My name is Kurt Wilcox. I work at the University of Oregon as a classified employee. Resident of this area for 45 years. At the university, I am also a member of the university's Board of Trustees. I'm the non-faculty staff member on the board. I will be clear, I'm speaking for myself today. I'm not speaking for the university or for the board. Next week, the board is going to raise tuition at the University of Oregon, 10.6% for resident undergraduates. We're also going to raise tuition for non-resident undergraduates, but we're only going to raise that 3%. And the reason is because 3/4 of the tuition revenue at the University of Oregon comes from out-of-state and international students. Half of our students are out-of-state and international. We are very pleased to have these students here. But the only way the university has managed to survive over the last 15 years with reduced budgets is by expanding enrollment primarily from out-of-state students. I think it's very important for us to look at making sure we're investing in higher education for Oregonians. That is our mission, and we need money to be able to do that. number of people are clearly telling you. $100 million is what higher ed needs for the seven universities. I would encourage you to support that. But I would also say, if that money comes through, we're still looking at 5% tuition increases for resident undergraduates. We are also looking right now, even with this 10.6% increase, at $9 million of budget cuts at the university. That tuition increase is not going to cover all the expenses. We need greater funding in higher education. Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Imani. I'm a first-year student at the University of Oregon, and I'm here to ask you to fight to provide $100 million for the Public University Fund and $15 million for the Oregon Opportunity Grant. Obviously, the cost of college affects me, and the fact that it's going to rise is significantly scary. Will I be priced out of a university education? Who knows? I'm the first in my family to attend university, so we're all really excited, but the excitement about that was diminished as the cost began to set in. As we began paying for advanced tuition deposit, housing, other college necessities, my parents began to take out huge loans, and then my guilt set in. About a month before I left for college, my dad called me upstairs and told me, "Don't feel bad about going to university. You earned your spot there." The financial burden my education has on my family is taking a toll on me, and I'm lucky enough to have parents who are willing to sacrifice their financial security for me, but that's not the case for many other students. I was recently hired on Monday at a job to help pay for costs and help alleviate some of that burden on my parents, but I'm afraid the time spent working a job is going to take away from time I could be building a social and professional network, studying, and I think these activities are more valuable than money. I came in with 44 credits, so that knocked off a year, but I'm afraid that working is going to prolong my path to graduation. In order to do this, we need you to reform our broken revenue system. Students across Oregon and myself would support any means of revenue reform to help generate the revenue necessary to fund our needs. So I urge you to please prioritize higher education affordability and secure Oregon's future. Thank you.
Committee members, thank you for your time. My name is Sarah Lopez, and I'm a veteran and a parent to a high Head Start child, as well as I'm on the Head Start Policy Council and in the Seekers program. Head Start does just that. It gives children a head start in life. My daughter has a speech delay, and since being enrolled in Head Start and working with EC Cares, she has made great strides in her speech and communication. Head Start isn't just a place for her to learn, isn't just a fun place for her to learn. It takes a holistic approach in helping families by finding appropriate resources from job training to free or low-cost services. Taking funding away from families would be a major disservice to them. And that's all I wanted to say. On a side note, as a veteran, I count on the services provided by the VA and other VA programs, and I would just implore you not to take funding away from veterans. Thank you.
Thank you. After the next group, let's see, this group should be Sue and Jill, and okay. After that will be Tom Bowerman, Joe Scott, and Beverly Potter.
My thanks to all of you for coming here to listen to our stories. I've learned a lot today about other needs for money. However, I'm particularly interested in healthcare money. And I'm Patricia Neal, and I'm from Depot Bay, Lincoln County, a rural area spread out all over the territory half the size of the state of New Jersey. That makes it critical for access to health care. School-based health clinics are very important in rural areas. Transportation and getting to a primary care doctor or whoever they're seeing is very difficult sometimes. Our buses run north-south four times a day. Good luck. So we need the school-based health clinics. And in our county, we also have in the clinics, besides primary care, mental health care for them. That may vary in other school-based health clinics, but we have that combination. And because they are served right there at school, they're out of class less than if they had to go off to find a doctor somewhere else. County health departments have been asked to modernize, but there hasn't been any money to do it with, and it's needed badly if they are going to accomplish it. It is also much needed in rural areas to have funding for mental health and addictions. We are short on the facilities that you might find in Portland or Salem or somewhere else. So we very much needed funding for those things.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. Co-chairs Devlin, Nathanson, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Susan Walters. I'm a registered nurse working at Sacred Heart Home Health here in Eugene, and I'm a professional member of the Oregon Nurses Association. ONA nurses remain dedicated to ensuring that our state continue to invest in critical public health programs and the services that provide vital access to care in our communities. Our state's funding crisis is the result of Oregon's choice in continuing to maintain the lowest corporate tax rates in this country. We now have a new choice. Ask Oregon's largest corporations to pay their fair share in taxes, or cut life-saving programs that so many of our patients rely on. Our home health nurses care for hundreds of patients here, right here in Lane County, and many are served through the Oregon Health Plan. Many of these patients are forced to make daily decisions. They're very real. Should I co-pay the cardiac treatment or the insulin? Should I buy insulin or groceries? We see this scenario play out daily in our patients' homes. Their predicament is not because of bad decision making, but because healthcare funding and access is already scarce. Further cuts would be devastating to the most vulnerable of this community. Additionally, significant reductions or the eliminations of vital nurse-led public health programs and school-based health centers would undermine critical safety net services at a time when our most vulnerable Oregonians will likely have nowhere left to turn for care. You as leaders have the choice to find viable ways to raise revenue this session and continue funding for these essential services. As a registered nurse, I strongly urge you to take action now. Preserve access to care in all our communities.
Co-chairs Devlin and Nathanson, thank you for being here today. You just look like you've just been listening to us for hours. Bless your hearts. Oh my God, you look so tired. I'll be brief. I'm here with Mark Allen from the Cottage Theater in Cottage Grove, as well as Josh Nichols from the Eugene Ballet in Eugene. I am Sue Dinsmore. I'm with the Friends of the Oregon Caves and Chateau out in Cave Junction. We're here together representing the 8 cultural projects that are endorsed by the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. This is something that was developed by our friend Peter Buckley some time ago to put capital projects together to ask for great investments, we think, in growing jobs and the economic development of the state of Oregon. We think this $6 million in requests would grow jobs in the cultural sector, expand access to cultural resources, restore, and in our case, the Oregon Cave Chateau, which is a national historic landmark. You have Crater Lake, but you also have the Oregon Caves, which is pretty remarkable. It will also support both contemporary traditional arts theater and encourage cost-effective innovative partnerships among cultural nonprofits and the 8 communities that in particular these projects will serve. Across the state, it will strengthen rural and urban communities, including the Benton County Historical Society in Corvallis, the Eugene Ballet, the Cottage Theater in Cottage Grove, the Oregon Cave Chateau in Cave Junction, the High Desert Museum in Bend, the Newport Performing Arts Center, of course, in Newport, the Portland Art Museum, and the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art. This, I'm going to let somebody else have the rest of my time. We just encourage you to support culture and economic development and the importance that it has to this great state of Oregon. Thank you very much.
And this is our final panel coming up.
Hello, co-chairs Devlin and Nathanson and the whole committee. Thank you for being here. And
Beverly, let me interrupt for a moment. There's just a little bit of conversation I want everyone to be able to hear. Thank you.
Thank you. Co-chairs Devlin and Nathanson and the whole entire committee, thank you so much for being here to listen to us for the past couple hours. My name is Beverly Potter. I am the director of Food for Lane County, and I'm also the chair of the 20 regional food banks covering the entire state. Hunger in our state has increased. Oregon has experienced the nation's highest spike in food insecurity. We have the food insecurity rate of 16.1%, which is the sixth worst state in the country, as compared to the national average of 13.7%. Here in Lane County, one in three households is food insecure. One in two kids in school is getting free or reduced lunches. I'm here to ask you to invest $4 million in the Oregon Hunger Response Fund for the 17-19 Department of Human Services budget. This important fund helps Oregon's 20 food banks acquire and distribute healthy food to over 950 local agencies across the state, helping families during times of economic hardship and helping communities struck by natural disaster. Food for Lane County supports this request as a necessary measure to ease hunger rising in our state. When we ask our clients what they would need to change in their lives, they no longer need food assistance. We have heard they need a job, they need higher wages, and currently they need affordable housing. But just 2 years ago when we asked the same question, the first two didn't change, but the third slot used to be affordable health care. But when the ACA arrived, it was replaced with affordable housing. I hope I'm wrong, but expectations.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Bev Schindler, and I'm sort of here by default because when you said Bev, I couldn't understand what you said as a last name. But for the last 15 years, I have served as a Department of Justice appointee to the Citizens Review Board, which is oversight over DHS cases. I've also served on the Juvenile Court Improvement Project and co-chaired for Lane County for 2 years the Child Abuse Prevention Treatment Act legislation, which has had task forces in three Oregon counties. In 2015 and 2016, all three CAPTA task force counties in the state of Oregon identified the same critical issue as being of the utmost concern in their counties, which was the need to recruit and retain adequate foster parent resources for Oregon youth who have been taken into substitute care. Oregon youth experience more maltreatment and abuse while in substitute care than the national average. Over the last 4 years, approximately 100 children, Oregon children, have been abused in substitute care every year. And most of this abuse occurs in non-relative foster placements. Foster parent focus groups indicate almost unanimously that they do not have the skills or training to safely care for the high needs of the increasingly traumatized youth who are placed in their care. DHS and Governor Kate Brown have been doing a task force and systems review to look at the dysfunction in the Department of Human Services and to work with the courts and to other providers in a multi-systems review to see what can be done.
over the past 5 years, over $31 million has been paid out in settlements and awards in lawsuits for children and youth who were abused. We can do better for funding DHS and the changes they're trying to make.
Chila Joskatwa Omnishi Shuhawanti Chise. My name's Joe Scott. As a member of the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians, I'd like to welcome you all to our homelands, ancestral homelands. And it's important that you know that I'm not speaking on behalf of the Confederated Tribes. I'm speaking on behalf of myself as a writer of Senate Bill 13. And this is kind of under the umbrella of school funding, and I'm asking for your support of Senate Bill 13, which funds the development of K-12 curriculum called Native American Experience in Oregon. I'm a veteran teacher of 20 years. I taught in a tribal school for 10 years. I'm a recognized Siletz tribal language and culture holder. I'm one of fewer than 10 people who speak the Siletz Dene language. My job was eliminated due to, you'd never guess, lack of funding. This curriculum would provide an accurate history, an accurate description of culture, an accurate assessment of treaty rights, explanations of sovereignty, descriptions of government, descriptions of the socioeconomic status of tribal people on tribal lands, and current events. And I bet not very many people in this room even know how many tribes, recognized tribes, there are in Oregon.
Nine.
Nice. All right. So this curriculum, someone else was saying we don't need more curriculum, but we need better curriculum, I think. And what this curriculum can do, provide for teachers, is an opportunity to satisfy some of the requirements. I remember learning about the other Trail of Tears, but not our own Trail of Tears, and our people being hunted for fun and profit. And that's all I have to say.
Those of you who didn't get to submit testimony, remember there's an email address, waysandmeans.budget@oregonlegislature.gov. It's been wonderful to hear from so many of you who care so deeply about the people of Oregon. And I thank you for the courtesy you have shown all of the speakers today.